Good morning and welcome to your wake-up call. My name is Tana Hartman and I am here for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Triangle Branch. This morning our guest is Hank Elkins. Hank is one of a group of people who on September 24th met with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, President of Iran, in New York. Welcome, Hank.
Well, thank you, Tana. We did meet on the 24th with the President of Iran and his foreign ministers and two members of Congress, as well as the ambassador to the UN. We were actually part of a group of some 43 peace groups from around the country. We met from 5 to 7 p.m. and had a frank discussion with our questions previously submitted to him, and he responded to these quite frankly. Not always to our satisfaction, but sometimes to our considerable satisfaction. Miriam Thompson and I went as representatives of the Triangle Middle East Legislative Education and Advocacy Project.
That's quite a mouthful.
It is. It's the abbreviation is Time Leap. And it's a relatively new organization, and it's consisting of representatives from Muslim, Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, and other organizations concerned about the Middle East. And we went, Time Leap has actually written some position papers. We met with Congressman Brad Miller, and we have a forthcoming meeting scheduled with Congressman David Price. This is a group which welcomes your representation if you are not represented through your organization, and you can do that by calling Miriam Thompson, 370-4114. That's 370-4114. So our meeting was 2 hours on the evening of the 24th, the very day after the president had spoken at the UN, and it was followed by a meeting on Thursday for 3 hours of strategy meeting with the 43 peace groups.
And tell us about, I mean, apparently you all submitted questions?
We did. We did, and from these, there were 10 selected, and they were presented by the representatives of the groups, and fortunately, President Ahmadinejad had these questions beforehand, and he had prepared answers. There was some give and take as well, but the fact that he had them beforehand clearly facilitated his responses.
Now, you said that some of his responses you were not satisfied with, others you were. What were the range of questions? Did anyone ask, for instance, about Iran having fired missiles?
Well, that didn't come up, but plenty of other questions did come up about nuclear weapons, about Israel, about women, about the future of relations with the U.S., and his relationship to the peace community here in the U.S.
Let's start with the nuclear energy issue, because there is, depending on what you read and whom you speak with, you hear that either that they are definitely an aggressor and planning to attack Israel. And I've also read in some press outside of this country that there is some danger, people feel there's a danger that the U.S. is going to attack Iran unilaterally, once again, as it did with Iraq. So,
well, of course, that is a real fear. And the International Atomic Energy Agency has in place its inspectors since March 2007. The latest report tells us that the IAEA has carried out 17 unannounced inspections of the fuel enrichment plant, and as well as the all the other facilities. So the IAEA continues to press for information from what has been alleged some weapons studies some 5 or 6 years ago. Iran says that the documents purporting to have found some weapons studies 5 or 6 years ago are inauthentic, and they ask for the original documents. The IAEA has not been able to deliver those, and so there's a bit of a stalemate on that. But the point is that the inspectors are there. They are in a position to report soon or immediately if there's any diversion to a non-peaceful use of atomic energy. So Iran is there with what they purport to be a thoroughly peaceful development of nuclear energy, something under the Treaty of Non-Proliferation. It's, of course, their right to do.
Yes, it is. Hans Blix has also said that that there is no evidence, and he has been following it, although he's not involved directly. But he has said in an interview abroad that there is no evidence that Iran is actually enriching uranium for weapons use. Now, but they do have some 4,000 centrifuges.
Well, that's
correct. And are planning to add more, I understand.
Well, that's correct. I would say that a heartening event this last weekend was the General Conference of the International General Conference of the IAEA in Vienna, where 82 member states voted in favor of a resolution for a nuclear-free zone. And Iran and Egypt both voted for that resolution. This is with the abstention of some 13 countries, not clearly a very divisive meeting, but I think it's a move forward in principle, even though the U.S. and Israel abstained from that vote. If we have a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East, that would be a great step forward. And everything that the president said to us was that he abhors war. He thinks that the allegations are false, totally about their working toward nuclear weapons, and that, in his view, it is ironic that the very country which has used atomic weapons and has thousands of atomic weapons still at the ready should be the one which is accusing Iran of building nuclear weapons.
Well, yeah, that's been pointed out any number of times before, but it's actually, I think now, commonly accepted that the U.S. really wants to be the only, you know, nuclear power on the block, you know, around the globe, and unless it's got allies. I mean, of course, who are the countries who abstained or who did not? Do you know which
many of the Arab states walked out this last Saturday because they felt that the a number of amendments had been proposed which were too favorable toward Israel, and of course Israel and the U.S. abstained. But nonetheless, 82 countries is I think a significant number.
Yeah, 82. And so Israel, all right, we have Israel, Pakistan, and India, and Iran. One of the arguments, I guess, that has been posited in favor of Iran's having nuclear capability is that it would, in effect, neutralize any threat from Israel in the region. What do you think?
Well, I think that, as Jonathan Schell has pointed out, the concept of détente, of balancing threat against threat, is passé. If you think about the fact that really no nuclear weapons have been used since the in spite of threats from various states, including our own, from at least some officials, it's questionable whether that type of balance really does or could exist if there were more than one nuclear power in the Middle East.
Yeah, it is. I agree. It is questionable, and more than questionable. I mean, I'm opposed to it, and I wish we could get everyone to sort of stop producing. But right now, what we have is we have the United States and Israel, as well as India and Pakistan, that have nuclear capabilities, and.
And, of course, there are many other countries with the capability of building nuclear weapons. The genie is out of the bottle. There's no question about the knowledge being available, and the capability to build nuclear weapons is widespread. The hope is that we can reach agreement to have a nuclear-free zone, not just in the Middle East, but, of course, around the world. That is the position of a number of the peace groups, and I think it's certainly a position that I hold and a number of others.
Now, you mentioned in your report a U.S. interest section, the creation of a U.S. interest section in Tehran as a possibility, or it's being considered by the State Department?
Well,
what does that mean?
Well, that's been mentioned as a possibility. It's been said. The New York Times carried this. And one of the advantages, of course, would be that it would facilitate granting of visas to Iranians to come to this country. This whole question of visas came up in relationship to the U.S. because Media Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, very explicitly said, I could not get a visa to go to Iran this last year. And President Ahmadinejad turned to his ambassador, and on the spot he instructed him to facilitate more visas for Americans. But he also called for reciprocity, that is, for more visas for Iranians to travel to the U.S. And clearly one function of an interest section, if it were to be established in Iran, would be to facilitate travel of Iranians to the U.S. Of course, that's not automatic. We
right.
have not seen that in the interest section in Havana, Cuba.
No, it's true. Did the question of U.S. covert activity in Iran come up?
Well, it came up in the sense that in our strategy meeting, Jim Fine of SCNL reported that Representative Russ Holt has confirmed that the report by Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker July 7th was, in fact, substantially correct. There may have been off a little bit on the amount of funds. And in the strategy meeting, we talked about Barbara Lee's House Resolution 6951, which would prohibit use of the Central Intelligence Agency or the Department of Defense to provide covert or clandestine assistance in overthrowing the government of Iran. And apparently Barbara Lee will reintroduce that bill in the next session of Congress. Now, the President Ahmadinejad did speak about explosions taking place. He did speak about the infiltration of the drugs into Iran, but he did not speak more explicitly about the covert activity being carried on.
Hersh has, in fact, suggested that Bush is both ineducable and very dangerous in this. What was your sense of, for instance, the attitude of Ahmadinejad toward the United States in
Well, he's clearly
was there an antipathy?
He was clearly very specifically came up when Joe Volk of the Friends Committee on National Legislation pointed out that in 2001, to the benefit of the U.S., that Iran had intervened with the Northern Alliance of Afghanistan to establish the current Karzai government. This is something that's been substantiated by James Dobbins, our first envoy. And in return, the U.S. Returned that favor by labeling Iran a member of the Axis of Evil.
Yes.
And in 2003, there were some backdoor negotiations to resolve some major outstanding problems, all of them apparently, but the U.S. spurned that offer of dialogue. So what Joe Volk asked was Iran ready to engage in substantive grand design, if you will, for relations with the U.S.? And he responded affirmatively. He was disappointed that his letter a couple of years ago had been not returned and
not answered. Yeah.
Yeah, not answered. So he felt that yes, he was ready. Iran was ready, but relations would have to go forward with steps more deliberate than they had in 2001 or 2003.
Well, we're going to take a minute here, a break, just to tell you about our sponsor, our underwriter, which is Internationalist Books, right here in Chapel Hill on Franklin Street. They're a wonderful local resource, this bookstore. If you haven't been in there and haven't used them, do so. They're great. You'll find books you won't find in any other bookstore. And if there's anything you don't find, they'll be happy to order it for you. So that's Internationalist Books on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. And we thank them for underwriting this show, the Wilf Wake Up Call. Now we're back with Hank Elkins. Hank, what did you all go actually expecting to get or to accomplish with this meeting?
Well, we really wanted to establish a better understanding of what his view was, and although we understand fully that he doesn't represent necessarily the higher level of government, the highest authority within Iran, he does clearly represent a very large swath of Iranian opinion as the elected president. And we ask a number of specific questions, for example, on back to nuclear energy. Why was Iran spending so much effort on nuclear energy as a oil power and producer of a lot of petroleum? And he said, well, look, the fossil fuels are promoting climate change, the excessive use of them. And as a surprise to us, he said, you know, we are actually spending three times the amount that we spend on nuclear energy on renewables. We're spending three times the amount for solar and for wind power as we're spending on nuclear energy. Not on water power. We don't have very much hydroelectric potential, but we do have solar power potential.
Well, that's good to know. Three times as much as on, but they are still pursuing the nuclear.
Now, absolutely. And he sees this as a response to excessive fossil fuel consumption and for concerns about climate change.
He is facing a re-election, there is to be an election next year, 2009, is it? Is it next year?
Well, that's right. And we asked him about that. Was he concerned? There is dissent in Iran. And he said, well,
and employment's very high.
Unemployment, that's right. And he said, no, well, let the people decide. He voiced no concern about that talked about the budding of democracy of young people within the mosques. He talked about women's rights and so on as nonprofit organizations as a indication of the growing participation in the in the process of democracy.
But nonetheless, there is something like 30% inflation there and very high unemployment, and those issues have to be raising concern.
Well, yes, and although he said, look, we've got those problems and the U.S. has the problems, we think the U.S. should concentrate on the problems here in the United States. He said, think about it. We have... he mentioned this in context of the women. He said we have 70% of our university students are women, and I'll probably be replaced by a woman. We even have cab drivers who are women. He said he doesn't think that's the particularly good vocation for a woman, but he has two active female vice presidents. Families with girls are very happy. And then he said, let women fix the financial crisis. And he had that to say. He really meant that for the worldwide global crisis, and he also felt that women had a role to play on the economic problems there in Iran.
A number of people, among them Seymour Hersh, and I believe... David Ignatius and Hans Blix have said that we have to be very careful about inciting sort of rabid anti-Iranian sentiment in this country and triggering an attack on that. And in fact, I read one article that suggested that it is conceivable that the United States might sanction an attack by Israel on Iran sometime later this fall after elections, but before, for instance, if actually, let me qualify that. It was if Obama were to win that the Bush government might sanction an attack on Iran before Obama took office.
Well, I have to say that the peace groups were unanimous, I believe, in lamenting that and feeling that the demonization of Iran was misplaced. To say in regard to Israel, it's very clear that his statement, he want to distance himself from what some people say was a poor translation of his view about wiping Israel off the face of the map, that what he really meant to say was that Israel would fall for internal reasons, much like the Soviet Union. He said in his address to the United Nations that today, I quote, the Zionist regime is on a definite slope to collapse, and there is no way for it to get out of the cesspool created by itself and its supporters, end of quote. So although he certainly has a negative attitude toward the Israeli government's, what he considers a called oppression, crimes of, particularly mentioned the destruction of houses and
in killings. Palestine.
In Palestine, okay. Exactly. And so his view was very explicit with us and with his interview with Amy Goodman later to say that he's not opposed to the Israeli people in general, but does oppose the crimes of oppression, assassinations committed by some Israelis. And so the idea of Iran being a danger to Israel or danger to the Middle East, in our view and the view of the 43 peace groups, is a misplaced attitude. He insists, and he introduced his remarks by saying that he abhorred war. He felt that war is caused by selfishness, expansionism, a failure to respect law, and that Iran would never start a war. It respected the rights of others. He feels that peace has to be built with justice, tolerance, and patience. I think he's sincere about his abhorrence of war and rejoice in that. At the strategy meeting, there were a number of people very enthusiastic about the creation now of the J Street Lobby. A counterfoil to the AIPAC, the more hawkish lobby.
And AIPAC is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee.
That's correct. And so there are voices within the U.S. speaking up for a more moderate peace, full solution, one based on diplomacy as opposed to the military approach that Benny Morris and others within Israel have espoused.
We're going to have to wrap up soon, but do you have any sense of the UN Security Council just recently unanimously approved a new resolution that reaffirms the sanctions on Iran for refusing to halt its uranium enrichment program. But it also offered some incentives to Tehran to halt the program. What do you all think about this? I mean, is it...
But again, the clearly the push for these sanctions does come from the U.S. and Britain, France, and the view of the peace groups is that there should be, in accordance with James Dobbins and others' views, face-to-face talks with the Iranians to get beyond the impasse that we now have. And if there's anything that I take away very positively from our discussions with President Ahmadinejad and his ambassador, it is that these face-to-face talks, and as James Dobbins suggests, they should be in private, have potentially fruitful results because they're able to deal with substantive issues without the interference of press and the hysteria that has, in our view, accompanied some of the current negotiations about sanctions.
Hank, before we wrap up, tell us what people can do who want to learn more about this and maybe get involved with.
Well, yes. Time Leap, as I say, is the Triangle Middle East Legislative Education and Advocacy Project, and it is very new, and while we welcome representation from other groups not currently represented, the way to do that is to call Miriam Thompson at the number 370-4114. That's 370-4114 to talk about the possibility of your group being represented with other Jewish and Catholic and Protestant and Muslim groups here in the Triangle.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the report. And it's heartening to hear that that you all actually have some faith that that Iran is not eager to rush into a war from their side. And folks, I want to tell you to visit, to look for links to a number of issues and groups in the area. You can also go to the WILF website. That's the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILF Triangle. It's triangleWILF.org. And you are listening to WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your all-volunteer radio station. And thank you, and join us again next week.